try to do something different if it makes sense to you. If you're small, the thing is, if you have a niche, a real small niche like podcast, and you can get a small advertiser, why not? There's nothing to stop you.
Most hosts never achieve the results they hoped for. They're falling short on listenership and monetization, meaning their message isn't being heard and their show ends up costing them money. This podcast was created to help you grow your listenership and make money while you're at it. Get ready to take notes. Here's your host, Adam Adams.
And we're back with another episode. I'm stoked. These episodes have been a lot of fun for me. I've enjoyed delivering every other day one where I jump in by myself and it's you and me having a dialogue, and I just pour into your business so that you can kind of grow your podcast, start your podcast, and know how to navigate those tools. And every other is an episode like today with, I've actually got Martha Hughes on the podcast, which I'm stoked. She started out like a while back. She's always been a runner. She's always turned to running, and she actually started a blog around running. And a couple of years ago, that blog really ended up turning into a podcast. So she brought it into a form like this, and she interviews runners that are slow, runners that are fast. I think she says something to the effect of, from the slowest of the slow to the first place runner, she'll have on the podcast. And she's had some remarkable stories as well on there, talking about the one guy, just as an example, whose whole family kind of suffered from depression. And this guy started running and it helped him to avoid that depression. And I felt that in my own life, Martha, just kind of interesting. When I get outside and I exercise outside in the sun, it just does something to you. It makes you sleep better. It makes you have more patience with your kids. And it seems to allow you to even make more money in your business. So I've loved myself mountain biking and running as well. So I'm stoked to have you on the show and share with our listener what you did right, what you might have done that you wish you would have done another way, and just to kind of share some of the systems that you may have put in place that support you being more systematic podcaster, if possible. So looking forward to diving in with you. Can we just take it a little bit back? You had a running blog. What made you decide to turn that into a podcast? Like, that seems like a big step.
Well, as a blog, I reached maybe 25, 50 people, and it just didn't seem like many people. And I put out a post every week and tried to get out to reach people, but it was kind of lukewarm. It was like, oh, okay, maybe we'll read it. People didn't seem that excited about it, but podcasts people seemed excited about. So I said, all right, I'll just take it to the next level and try it. A podcast, because why not? It couldn't be that hard, right?
So that's kind of, you were thinking maybe this might be a better way to reach more people.
Right. To reach more runners and to be more involved in running, in the running community. Yes.
Yeah. Like, as you were starting that, as you were getting into launching this podcast, was there any big challenge that kind of almost held you back that you had to overcome in order to have the podcast launched?
No, there were a lot of challenges. Technologically, there were. Financially, it was much harder than I thought it was going to be. It was a little bit more expensive than I thought it was going to be. But I jumped over every hurdle that I had to and got going. It was a little hard and a little frustrating at first. I didn't understand how things worked, but I managed to learn how to do it. There was a lot of advice, and some of the advice seemed to fight against other advice. One person would say this, another person would say that. I wasn't quite sure which way to turn. You get a little confused when you have 20 people saying 20 different things.
I didn't realize I was muted.
Oh,
so I was like trying to talk, and then I was like, oh, yeah, I'm muted. Here's the thing. Well, a couple things. Number one, I love how you say jumped over every hurdle that you had to, because it really just ties it back into running. Because I remember when I was a runner, I was trying all of the different sports. I threw shot put and discus, and I even practiced to do the hurdles. Those were the hardest thing, because I could do one hurdle But if you gave me a line of hurdles, then I would second guess everything. I could easily run after one hurdle and clear it like split second. But if you give me a second one, I'm nervous. I can't shuffle my feet right. And I'm having to jump over and it gets pretty confusing. And that ties into what you were sharing here. You had 20 people sharing perhaps 20 different opinions. So you had all this conflicting advice and everybody seems convicted in their advice. They're like, this is the way. This is the only way. And then like 19 other people are also saying, this is the only way, but it completely is unique. It's its own advice. And it also conflicts with that first one. So I'm curious with maybe one or two examples of this. Maybe you say, I had some people saying to do this and some other people to say do this. What is an example of that? And which way did you choose? And are you glad you did?
Well, I think a couple of the examples are some people don't like or didn't like that my, well, before COVID, I belonged to this podcasting group in San Francisco and we would meet once a month and each person would have their podcast critiqued by the group. It actually was a good learning experience, but some people in the group didn't like the fact that my podcast was sometimes 30 minutes and sometimes 50 minutes or sometimes 25 minutes and sometimes 55 minute things. And they thought it should be closer to an exact time. And it's not going to be like that. It's going to be different times. And my listeners don't seem to have a problem with that. Of course, the people in the podcast group aren't my listeners. They're not runners. So I said, okay, well, that's fine. That's something to think about. But if it got over an hour long, I would divide it up into two, part one and part two. But since it isn't, I'm going to not really give that too much credence. And I'm going to keep it at varying times. Another one was some people say, well, if you don't have a certain amount of listeners, then you shouldn't go after sponsors. Well, before COVID, I usually had a sponsor for each show because I went through either local businesses or self-published books in health or fitness. You have to look for sponsors who are small and don't mind spending a couple bucks on a podcast because they know they're going to get a big return from you for without spending a whole lot. Self-published authors is a really, really good way to get a sponsor and someone who's really looking for a way to push their product. That's a really good way to look for a sponsor.
Self-published
authors. Or people who have a product who isn't out in stores, something that they only sell through Amazon, things like that. Small little things or local businesses. If there's a local business in your area and you have somewhat very small podcast, very niche oriented podcast, you can get a sponsor without having thousands of listeners every episode.
Yeah. So like with you getting sponsors, it sounds like you've successfully been able to attract sponsors to your show. Is that correct?
I did before COVID. Now it's really hard. So the things have changed. So I got to get back in. I haven't really made a serious effort to get back into it, but I'm starting to put things together and to try to get sponsors again. Now it's a little harder, so I've got to do things a little differently. But before all the whole shutdowns and everything, it was not that difficult. Now I think it's a little different game.
Well, I have two ideas that I want to share. Number one, well, I have one question and one idea, as a matter of fact. One question, one idea. The question is, how did you find your very, very, very first sponsor? The idea is what you might be able to do just to be able to use, pull in a little bit of revenue for your podcast, even without finding a quote sponsor, is you could go ahead and like work with Amazon. So you can become an Amazon affiliate fairly easily. They have one rule. And that rule is that you sell, I think, five or six of that product within the first like 6 months. I don't remember the exact, you'll have to look it up. But we became an Amazon affiliate and there's some tops that you might like to wear, underwear you might like to wear, socks, shoes that you love wearing that you swear by these New Balance whatevers or these the Minimus or these Nikes or whatever it is. And you might be able to go and buy a new pair of Reeboks and run in them. And if you like them, jump in and say, hey, there is an affiliate link in the show notes if you'd like to check these out on Amazon. They are delivered to your house if you have Prime within 24 hours or within whatever. Mm-hmm. And so you don't even have to have a sponsor in order to make money with the podcast. And you'd be able to support your listener with things that you really believe in, like tops you like to wear or shorts you like to wear. Right. And you might be able to mention them on some of the episodes. I personally love New Balance. So my New Balance was my best running shoe personally. So I'd be like, hey, if any of you guys have wide feet like me, this is where you go. If I had a little bit more of a normal size foot, these are the Nikes that I would choose. And I'll put a link to both of those in the show notes, for example. So that's my idea. The question is, Martha, how did you get your very first podcast?
I asked one of the trail race companies that I've known for a long time if they would sponsor me, and they right away said yes.
So are we allowed to talk about numbers or figures or time periods for sponsorship was?
They sponsored me for like 6 months.
Awesome.
And we had their ad on my website, and I ran their ad for 6 months, and I found an outline to write up a contract, and they signed it and everything. Yeah, it was pretty nice.
Out of curiosity, though, 6 months, that's amazing. And you've been doing weekly episodes, every single, like one just published today, I think, and another one exactly 7 days ago, and the one before that exactly 7 days before that. How much were they doing for each episode, or was it like more of a monthly thing?
I think I'm trying to remember now that you're talking about. It's like 30 or 40, something like that, an episode. Something
okay.
like that.
Okay. So that's great.
Not bad.
Yeah, that's great because
a little bitty. I mean, I get maybe 200 listens an episode. So that's not bad.
Well, I think joke's on your San Francisco podcast team saying that you shouldn't even try to monetize. I think the joke's on them. If they had your way of doing things, they'd be able to at least offset some of the production costs or their own time. If it takes them like an hour, for example, to record an episode, even if on the low end, like that's 30 or 40 bucks an hour, not everybody in the world is making 30 or 40 bucks an hour. So
right.
I think that's something that you're inspiring me. And I think you're inspiring our listener. And frankly, I hope that your podcast meetup group is listening and says, you know, I should rethink the way that I've been taught. I guess you can easily monetize by reaching out to a friend and get 30 or 40 bucks an episode, which is a great place to start. So,
for the record, it wasn't the meetup group with the ad links. They didn't say that. I've heard that from a lot of the quote unquote experts in the field who say that.
Okay.
I won't name names, but I've heard that from more than one person who say you shouldn't say that. But don't always trust the experts. Try to do something different if it makes sense to you. And if you can, if you're small, the thing is, if you have a niche, a real small niche like podcast, and you can get a small advertiser, why not? There's nothing to stop you.
Yeah. Love it. And just to reiterate, I think I mentioned this in the beginning of the episode. I hope I did, but your podcast is called Martha Runs the World.
Yes.
Martha Runs the World. I actually subscribed to it today. Well, I am subscribed.
You.
I can see.
Thank you.
You've got a ton of ratings and reviews already. Mm-hmm. I want to mention to our listener, especially if you love running and you're a podcaster, and here we are, we're all here to help each other grow. And so I would be especially honored if you did run over to Martha Runs the World. Oh. The link's in the show notes too. And just listen to an episode or two and give Martha that podcast an honest written review. Like, review it how you really believe it. And I know she'll get to that and she'll be able to tweak things or at least get that social proofing that we all need in order to grow. Just like Amazon, the more ratings and reviews a product on Amazon, like those Nikes or those New Balances or the Reeboks we were talking about earlier, the more ratings and reviews those products have, the more likely that we're going to buy into it, because that social proofing is literally so important to us as human beings. And so when her next listener comes, I want them to see that you've already taken the time to leave an honest written rating and review. So I'll put that out there. Martha, you probably learned a ton more things. You probably had a lot of other conflicting advice. One of them you mentioned was when you should start monetizing. And the other one was whether to start monetizing right away. Oh, and the length of the episodes, like some might be 20 or 30 and some might be 40 or 50 or 60 minutes. But with you, was there any other conflicting advice that you were hearing and then you decided to go a certain route?
No, not conflicting, but I think it got confusing because now I'm much more into the technical aspects, but I didn't quite understand all the different things that you had to do. I didn't understand that you had to have a host for your podcast. And then if you want to have a separate website that actually shows the name of your podcast, you have to do that too. So I didn't understand all these things that went into it. It took me a while to find a podcast host who was friendly enough to answer all my questions. One host I won't name got really cranky when I called them like 3 times in one day because I had questions. But when I found someone who was really very friendly and patient, I'm staying with them and I'll be with them forever. So it just really depends on just things like that. If I have questions, I'm going to ask. I'm not going to stop asking. And if I can't find the answers myself, I will call and I'll ask. I'm that kind of person. I'm pretty dogged about that. If I need something or if I want to find an answer, I'll find an answer.
Yeah. I think that that's great. And it's gotten you to where you are. So who did you end up working with for your hosting platform then?
Buzzsprout.
It's funny. My team manage a ton of different people's podcasts. Mm-hmm. And Buzzsprout's one of our favorites. Like we really enjoy working with Buzzsprout. We think it's affordable. We think it works out really well. Mm-hmm. We actually have an affiliate link for Buzzsprout. We'll put it into the show notes right here. So if you're listening and you want to just scroll down, you'll see it in the resources area. But no, I agree with you, Martha. Buzzsprout is awesome. They have really good customer service and they publish your podcast on all of the platforms, which is really, really cool.
Yeah.
You mentioned a little bit about your process going into this and learning. And I was curious about who edits your podcast and if you do it, why or why not? If you hire it out, why or why not?
Oh, I do it myself. Even if I could afford to hire it out, which I really can't, I would still do it myself because I don't think anyone would be able to understand what I'm trying to do with it. Or it would take as long for me to explain how to do it as it would for me to just do it. Now I'm pretty quick with it. I can get it done in less than an hour. I can edit it pretty well, I think. I think I don't do a bad job with it myself. And I'm better at speaking, so I don't have to edit as much as I used to. I try to edit out as many uhs and you knows and that kind of thing as I can and still make it sound natural. I'm better at speaking now than I used to. It's been a lot of practice and a lot of work, but I think I'm getting much better at it.
You mentioned two really great points, and I've experienced both points myself. I started when I was doing this, we could afford. It would be easy to offload it, but I was like holding it back because I didn't think anyone else could do it like me. I'm a perfectionist. I'll just be honest. I'm a perfectionist. I micromanage my team. I try not to be honest. But it's like, I'm so critical of others and I have an exact way. And so it took me forever to offload it. The two great points that I loved that you said is because you edit your own, it's been helping you with A, learning to be better at speaking. Mm-hmm. And that I experienced that exact same thing. If there was ever any benefit, I'm more on the side of just offload it to somebody else. Of course, it's self-serving because my team does all of this for other people, but I'm like, offload it to someone else so you don't have to do all of it. But what I realized on the pros of editing your own is you might ask a question. This is me at least. I'll ask a question. It takes me 7 minutes to ask one simple question. And I'll sit there just being like rolling my eyes. Why did it take me so long to ask that simple question? So then I can get a little bit more concise. Furthermore, all of the ums and ahs, I can start hearing myself being like, I didn't even know that I started every sentence with, okay, so, or saying, you know, to my audience, for example. I learned all of this and it helped me to be a better speaker. So when I go onto a live stage, I make fewer of those mistakes because I'm used to how it comes across. That really helped. And that was a huge benefit. The other thing that you mentioned is that you were editing out a lot of the ums and ahs. And what this other great point that I loved is you only do enough so that it still sounds natural. And our team does the exact same thing. Like when we edit for other people, we are allowed to leave up to two ums or ahs or okay, so's or you know's. Like we're allowed to leave up to two filler words within three sentences. Once it goes past that, we have to cut them out because then it's starting to sound annoying to the listener. Right. So that was critical. You should edit out some ums and ahs. And I like what you said, as long as it sounds natural, our team, we just say you can have two within three sentences. And the other one was how much you learn when you're editing your own podcast about yourself and what filler words you're using so that you can be better at speaking on stage, for example.
I'm super critical, especially of the real popular podcasts who don't edit anything. There's one particular very popular podcast I used to listen to, and the guy doesn't edit anything. And I had to stop listening to him after a while because every other word was, and you know, and he makes a lot of money as it is. And I'm not going to listen to it anymore. I'm not going to contribute to that anymore because it's just lazy. I would probably be a faithful listener and might even give on his Patreon if his editor would just edit out some of those us and you knows.
Absolutely.
Crazy.
Martha, you brought up another way to monetize, and that's Patreon. Have you considered that yourself?
Well, I do have Patreon, and I think I lost a couple because I think maybe their credit cards or something, the expiration date. So they kind of dropped off and I tried to get in touch with them, but I can't get them back. So I'm trying to get more on. I'm down to my bare bones, but I do have it.
Got it. Yeah, I've never personally considered Patreon, but I know a lot of people that have had good success with it. Great friend, her name's Crystal. She's got Hello Dysfunction. And with theirs, I think they're making several thousand dollars, like $6,000 a month. I think, don't quote me, I'd have to have her in the room with me to, but I believe that they started doing Patreon and they have a significant amount of people doing anywhere from $1 to $5 and a few people doing more. So it's kind of, it's pretty cool. I still haven't considered it for me. Martha, with your podcast, Martha Runs the World, what do you wish you did differently? Is there any one thing or two things that you could actually pinpoint to say, if I started the whole podcast over today, knowing what I know now, these are the two things I would do differently, for example?
Oh, wow. Well, I probably started my Patreon too early. So that's one thing that I would have started. I would have waited 6 or maybe 9 months to start it. So I think I started that too early.
Could you explain why there's a too early for Patreon?
Well, I think when you start asking for money from people, it might be too early until you get more faithful base. I think it might be too early to ask. So I think I started that too early, but I'm not sure. I'm just guessing at this point, and it's too late to do over. So what are you going to do? And I just think maybe I should have looked more into the tech part of it before I started, but that's not me. I'm not a try to be safe type person. I'm a jump before you head first, before you see how deep the pool is type person. That's me. So I can't help my personality.
Okay. So those are going to be the two that you kind of pinpoint. I'll say with Patreon, I'll make sure that my team finds, we'll try to make an affiliate link because we always like to be able to make money through the podcast. So we'll either put an affiliate link or just a link to Patreon. So if you're confused, you'll be able to jump into Patreon and figure out how you could monetize. Martha's saying that she started her Patreon too early. I want to push back on that myself. I just want to have an argument with you, a fair, just to sit and think through it, because I might have a counter opinion. But with the tech part, you mentioned that you jumped all in, and that's a huge one. I think it's not just with the tech for most podcasters. I think most podcasters are like ready, fire, aim. Would you agree? Most podcasters are like, I'm just going to start. I was told to just have a podcast, and if you build it, they will come. And like, they just like ready, fire, aim, just start. Don't overthink it is kind of the advice that I hear a lot. And I liked it. You said maybe you probably wouldn't do it differently next time because it is your personality, but it is to at least illustrate that there is a difference between ready, aim, fire, and ready, fire, aim. So I like that you brought it up. Mm-hmm. With Patreon? Go ahead.
Well, there are two types of people. There are people like me who just do it. And there's the other person who says, well, I have 20 episodes, but I don't want to start yet. So there's two types.
Yeah. Maybe there needs to be a middle ground. Yeah. I think I have a free course. It's like part of this podcast. You don't even have to go anywhere. It's just episodes 1 through 6. But literally was talking about that balance between those two people. And we've got to find a middle ground. So I can't find the exact podcast while we're recording, but I'll just let you know if you're listening to this episode today and you haven't yet gone to the free, just episode 1 through 6, head over there and we'll talk a little bit more about that. But Martha, yeah, you may have started Patreon too early, and I'm wondering if that could be true or not, because if it's done well, if I'm getting value for being a Patreon, if I personally get value from it, then I want to be one. I want to give money as long as it's reciprocal. So I'm wondering if there's another happy medium, a balance for Patreon. If there might be one way, like, hey, give me money. I need to afford my podcast and I don't even know who you are, but give me money. Then that's not going to go over well and you're going to lose listeners. But if you're like, hey, for $5 a month, you get $30 a month in value, you would be dumb not to take advantage of this Patreon right now, because it's only $5 and you're getting $30 of value, or you're getting $10 of value, or even $6. It's $5 and you get $6 in value every single month. Then in that case, I believe that it makes it almost a no-brainer where, like, why not start it at the very first? In the very beginning day. For that example, that if you're adding more value than you're charging in price, I think you always should start right away because you're literally doing a service for your listener. But additionally, I believe that if you don't ask for it in the first day, but all of a sudden one day you open up the Patreon, it could come across like now she's selling out. And then you lose them anyway. So I just think that maybe the best way to do it, and I haven't done Patreon. I'm only thinking like, I'm trying to be your listener today. I listen to Martha Runs the World. I actually just subscribed to it. So I'm now a listener. I listened to one of the episodes before we started recording as well. And I'm thinking to myself, what would make me want to give $1 a month or $5 a month or $10 a month? Well, there's two things that would help me. A, I would feel like I was contributing because there's a part of my heart that wants to contribute and support other people. And or B is that I could feel like I was getting more value than I was giving. So if you're listening and you want to figure out Patreon, I think those are the considerations to do. And Martha, just out of curiosity, would you still be like, and it's totally fine if you're position doesn't change, but I'm curious if it changed after hearing that.
No, that's true. You've got good points there. So I have to think about that. It may change.
All good. I like it. You're not willing to commit yet, but when you are, you're all in head first off the diving board, even in shallow water.
All right.
Martha. So as you know, our main listener is a podcaster. They either are brand new, meaning they've done it less than 2 years, or they are about to start. If you could think about that person for a moment that's listening with us, they've got their earbuds in or whatever, they're going on a run or they're cooking or cleaning or I don't know, they're on a drive and they're listening to you and I right now. And you know, you've got something that you can add value to them before they go to that next level, either starting the podcast or getting a sponsor or whatever it is, what would you say? What would you say to our listener?
I would say, know what you want to talk about on your show. Know what your subject is. Stay true to your subject and don't worry about the numbers. New podcasters always worry about how many listeners they have. Don't worry about that when you're beginning. Think about what you want to say. Have a topic for each episode and stay true to it. Stay true to your genre. Stay true to what your show is about, and you will gain listeners. That all comes naturally. And every time I go into a podcast group and there's new podcasters, they always say, is this a good number? Is this a good number? And it's like a broken record. It's like, don't worry about that right now. Just do your show. Just produce shows. Be consistent. Be true to why you started your show in the first place, and it will all pull together.
That's good. I like that. Martha, this might be my very last question. I'm wondering, with your experience being a runner, starting your blog, moving it in, transitioning it into this podcast, growing the podcast, focusing on your listener, just pouring into them, as you mentioned a moment ago, the right genre, just adding value to the right person each and every time. As you've been doing this and over the years, now what is your next step? If you could just tell us, what's Martha's plan for the podcast?
Just keep going. Now that races are coming back, what really hurt me over this last year is that we haven't had any live races. And that's one of my biggest drives for new listeners, is to go out to the races, to pass out stickers, to pass out buttons, to get in touch with people live, to go to race expos, to go to races, to talk about the podcast, to be in touch with runners. And we haven't been able to do that at all. And that is what's really hurt my podcast. So now that we have live races coming up, my plan is to get out to the races, to pass out stickers, pass out buttons, to get back in touch with my fellow runners to promote my podcast.
Love that.
Yeah.
I just had a random idea. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it'll work, but it might be worth a shot. Like, you could go to local running shoe stores and you might be able to either ask them if they can leave your stickers or your business cards or whatever it is on their counter.
Yeah.
And if it was me, because I go crazy, like Martha, I'm a big ready, fire, aim guy sometimes. And what I would probably do if it was my podcast is I would call like nearly every runner's place in the entire country. I'd have my team of virtual assistants call each and every one and say, hey, if I give you $100 and an interview on the podcast so that you can promote what you're doing, will you leave 100 stickers out in front of your checkout desks? I don't know if it's real or not, but in my head, that's like immediate change. You could probably monetize that pretty well. Anyway, I don't know if that would work or not, but I know for me, one thing that I'll do is I'll interview you on my show because you will help attract other people in your sphere. Oh, yeah, I've always wondered how Martha starts a podcast. I'll check out that episode, right? Or because I serve podcasters and you're on the show, maybe we get to know each other and maybe you're like, oh, Adam, I know you like doing your own editing, but just pretend like you hated it. Oh, Adam, how much is it to work with you or something like that? So it's the same thing with you going to these different places. They are the main team that helps people get their shoes and fit them, and they have runners clubs. And if they all knew about you in the country, it would be pretty easy for all of the runners in the country to know about you. I don't know. Just an idea.
Well, you know, I'm going to promote the heck out of this episode too, because that's what I do. So
I appreciate you. Oh, yeah. And I can't wait to see your podcast grow even more. And again, to the listener, especially if you're a runner, go and check out Martha Runs the World and just leave an honest rating and review after listening to an episode or two. Martha, thank you for coming on the show. There's a link to Patreon. There's a link to Buzzsprout and anything else that we talked about. We'll make sure that there's links to it in our show notes. So you could just scroll down for the resources tab. Awesome story. I love running myself. If I was more of a runner, I'd ask to jump on your podcast, but mountain biking took over for me. I don't know why. Martha Hughes, thank you for coming on the show. I'm going to let you go. I like how you end your podcast. You say something like, lace up your shoes and go out. Say, what's your sign off?
Let's tie up our shoelaces and go for a run.
And what's mine? Until next time, go grow your audience, grow your show, grow your influence, and grow your income. Bye for now. This episode is brought to you by growyourshow.com. Grow Your Show lets you be the star of your show while we handle all the hard stuff. We offer reliable and affordable post-production services that allow you to grow your show organically without all the work. So go ahead and check out the website right now and feel free to schedule a call with me and let's take your show to the next level. Again, growyourshow.com. You just press record, we handle the rest.